You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And the melodrama is almost over. On that long-awaited note, welcome in to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Tuesday evening, the guess here is that we are less than 24 hours away from Carmelo Anthony officially committing and possibly even signing with the Houston Rockets. That's because Monday we learned that the Atlanta Hawks, after the three-way trade, which went official last week, sending Carmelo from Oklahoma City to Atlanta. The remaining steps were for all players in that trade to complete their physicals, which happened over the weekend. And then with the trade officially official, with the physicals in the rearview mirror, that allowed the Hawks to wrap up their buyout with Melo, giving back, Melo is, $2.4 million. That's essentially what he'll be paid in Houston, so he'll still be made whole in terms of his salary. It's just the final $2.4 million will come from the veteran's minimum salary that, by all accounts, he will be making in Houston, the rest from Atlanta via the buyout. So Atlanta finalized that on Monday. He was placed in the waiver wire, courtesy of NBA regulations. That takes 2 days, even though it's impossible for Melo to be claimed because no one has anywhere close to $27 million in cap room to take him at his current salary. Even if someone wanted to, the process mandates that he goes through it for 48 hours and he will officially clear at 4 p.m. Houston time on Wednesday afternoon. Shortly after that, my guess is when we get news that he is committed to the Rockets and maybe even signs, because it's not like there's that much complex paperwork with signing a veteran's minimum contract. And it's not like he needs to meet with the Rockets or any unanswered questions, because we know that the Thunder, way back in Las Vegas during the Summer League in early July, granted permission to the Rockets to speak with him. So the finish line is definitely in sight for Carmelo Anthony, and we'll have more on it once it actually does become official, probably tomorrow, I would guess the latest by Thursday or Friday, the end of this week. But other than the finality of it, and of course when we get to meet with him, those of us in the Houston media, Rockets are not required to have an off-season media availability for Carmelo or a big press conference. My hunch is that they do, simply because if they don't, then his presence sort of overshadows media day, which I think they would like to be a little more broad-based about the team as a whole rather than just Carmelo. So my guess is that we do hear from Carmelo, if not this week, maybe next week, just to get that out of the way. So the media day is about the team as a whole rather than Carmelo. But other than the final terms, it becoming official, and then hearing from Carmelo itself, there's not too many other angles to look at this from. We've been discussing this really since July 6th when it became evident that Carmelo and the Rockets were a potential fit, that the Thunder were going to part ways with him, and we've had a number of guests on the show breaking down the fit, and while I'm optimistic, again, he's not without risk, 34 years old, his defense has slipped, but at the same time, a first ballot Hall of Famer, a 10-time All-Star, a former scoring champion, it's a risk, especially the veterans minimum, that you need to take, especially in the NBA, where you're competing with the Golden State Warriors, who, by the way, just added Boogie Cousins earlier this offseason. That said, we're not going to talk Carmelo on today's show because, as stated, we have already been around the block several times with this. And really, you can go all the way back to last year because the melodrama, as I called it leading off, I call it that because, well, it's been around ever since June 28th of 2017 when Chris Paul was traded to Houston. And, of course, everyone knows the close friendship between Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. It's one of the many reasons why people think Carmelo has a better chance to succeed here in Houston than he did in Oklahoma City this past season. But really, ever since Chris came to Houston, Carmelo has been trying to get his way here, and unfortunately, the Knicks held their ground last offseason, didn't work out. This offseason, Carmelo will finally have his freedom when he clears waivers at 4 p.m. Wednesday, and I think that's when we finally get some closure to this. Carmelo becomes a Houston Rocket, and from there, we just see how it works on the floor, beginning in training camp in late September. In the meantime, though, there are other issues to discuss. Now, yes, there are some possible small things the Rockets could do for the remainder of this offseason. They still need to sign DeAnthony Melton with a portion of the MLE, rookie guard out of USC. It's also possible they could make a minimum signing. There's some potential ring-chasing vets still out there. We've heard the Rockets connected to Nick Young in the past. In terms of an offer this offseason, my guess is that would probably be at the minimum. We know Jamal Crawford is still out there. Those are guys in their 30s that fit the profile of a traditional ring-chasing veteran that might sign for the minimum on a team like Houston. So conceivably, you could have news break at any moment on that, but it's not really worth speculating much on because it's not like it, in August with veterans, you're going to go on long, protracted visits, tours. It's just going to be a matter of whatever day those guys want to sign. If they want to sign with the Rockets, if the Rockets have a roster spot, they could create one simply by ditching Shanu Onuaku, who doesn't really seem to be a fit anymore, third-year center out of Louisville. It could happen, but ultimately not worth too much speculation other than just occasionally refreshing Twitter. We'll see what happens if a potential minimum salary candidate wants to go to the Rockets. One of the benefits, of course, of minimum salary candidate is that the NBA would kick in a sizable portion, up to 40%, or I should say reimburse the Rockets from shared revenues, which would make it even more advantageous for the Rockets being a tax-paying team. But the real fun for the Rockets could be on the trade market. It's not a given they do a deal before the season. As I outlined last week in doing my minutes projection, after adding Carmelo Anthony on top of James Ennis, the Rockets have got two more bodies to replace Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, so the rotation is filling out fast. And then you have a lot of young prospects, like DeAnthony Melton, Vince Edwards, Joe Chi, Isaiah Hartenstein, at the end of the bench, competing for those 11th and 12th spots on the active roster. Last week, when I was tallying up the 240 minutes per game, I got to 220 without even factoring in Gerald Green, who I think the Rockets definitely plan on giving at least some minutes to on a semi-regular basis. So it's not as if the Rockets have to make a move. That's why I say while they could, if there's a quality ring-chasing veteran willing to sign with them for the minimum, they could do that type of deal, but it's far from a given. They don't need guys to eat minutes. They can be strategic at this point about where the fits are, and that's why the trade market makes the most sense. We heard from Daryl Morey himself last week in an interview with the Space City Scoop blog that I recapped on one of last week's shows, in which Daryl said that he felt good about a trade at some point before February. He didn't name any names, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out who he's talking about, and that's probably Ryan Anderson, because he makes $20 million. That's a sizable salary figure that could be used to make nearly any player in the NBA at least mathematically possible to acquire, yet Ryan does not really have a rotation spot in Houston in that minutes distribution that I referred to previously. So it's pretty clear that the Rockets would be interested in moving Ryan if they could get someone to upgrade the rotation in some way. I think ideally they would love to add one more defender, and to that end, we heard from Brian Windhorst of ESPN over the weekend that the Rockets were looking around at defenders. They were active on the trade market and potentially willing to take back long-term money. More on that in a moment. We hear from Kelly Eco of the USA Today Sports Group, based here in Houston, that the Rockets are looking at a deal involving Ryan Anderson and Kent Bazemore. Kent Bazemore in Atlanta fits the defensive profile. Again, the Rockets with Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute going out. James Ennis really the only defensive-minded player coming in. Given the value that the Rockets' defensive length and versatility had last year, their switching ability against the Warriors, I think they would love to have not just Ennis, but one more defensive body as well. Now, it doesn't have to be by trade. They are saving most of the mid-level exception for buyouts, and that's an option. But if they could fill it by trade, of course they would rather do that, and then you can save the buyouts for any other needs that arise during the season. So we heard the Bazemore rumor from Kelly Eco. That's something a lot of us have speculated for a while, but it's good to hear the Rockets confirmed interest in, because Bazemore in Atlanta, he's someone they had interest in July 2016, has a contract fairly similar to Ryan Anderson, just under $20 million per year, so it's easy to make the math work. Good three-point shooter, career 36%, but coming off a career-best 39.4% from behind the arc a year ago, and a quality defender, not a great one, but a pretty good one that's fairly versatile as well. We also heard from ESPN's Zach Lowe on his latest Podcast Tuesday that the Rockets were looking around and kicking the tires on a few Ryan Anderson deals. He mentioned the Bazemore possibility, but he also mentioned the Miami Heat. Possibilities there would include Tyler Johnson and James Johnson, and even the Cleveland Cavaliers with J.R. Smith, who doesn't really fit the defensive mold, but conceivably could be another three-point shooter for the end of your bench. There's one thing that all of those guys, Bazemore, Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, J.R. Smith, have in common, and that's the length of their contracts. All, like Ryan Anderson, expire in the year 2020, and I don't think that's coincidental. So that's what I want to make today's show mostly about, is exploring the finances of the Ryan Anderson trade, which again is far from a given. The Rockets would like to add more defense, but it's not the only avenue. They could theoretically sign someone for the minimum. If they like someone still out there in free agency, they could add via the buyout market. Or who knows, maybe even Carmelo is not the enormous defensive negative that some make him out to be, because if you squint hard enough, you can see through some of the statistics that in a switching scheme like Houston operates, he's actually not that bad. Now, he also doesn't grade as particularly good, but he may not be the huge liability that a lot of folks around the NBA are making him out to be. That said, if the Rockets want to go for the kill shot to potentially replicate the level of defense they had a year ago, the volume of options, while adding the versatility and scoring of Carmelo Anthony on the offensive end on top of what they had a year ago, the best way to get to that level now with Trevor Ariza out the door is to probably leverage that Ryan Anderson contract. But to do that, there's a financial component to it that, in my opinion, is being overlooked. More on that in a moment. So I wanted to lead off by just giving a general recap of the news. Not shocking that the Rockets are shopping Ryan Anderson, 4 years, $20 million per season, signed in July 2016. It's largely been seen as an overpay since it's happened. So it's not that surprising the Rockets are open to moving him. The reason that I want to revisit the subject again is because, well, A, there's some misconceptions about the financial value equation, in my opinion. But B, there does seem to be at least some momentum. Brian Windhorst of ESPN reporting the Rockets are very active in trade discussions. Zach Lowe throwing out several teams the Rockets have reached out to about Ryan, including the Miami Heat, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Atlanta Hawks. The fact that Daryl Morey went out of his way to allude to a trade possibility, although it could be delayed to as late as February, remains to be seen if someone would give the right package before the season. It might be that to extract maximum value for Ryan, you need to let part or over half of the season expire to reduce the overall financial bill going with him to the new team. But regardless, Daryl Morey went out of his way to allude to the possibility. It doesn't take a genius when you look at this rotation to see who the odd man out is in terms of whose salary does not fit with a clear need and spot in this 2018-2019 Rockets rotation entering the season. Now, financially, the misconception that I see thrown out a lot, it's been this way for a few months, and I still see it from time to time, is that the Rockets should look or are looking to move Ryan Anderson just to get rid of the contract. That is not the case. First off, if the Rockets simply wanted to ditch him into cap space, they could have done it last summer, they could have done it this summer at a cost of probably two future first-round picks, and that was the alleged cost last summer. I think this summer, with one less year on the deal, it absolutely would have been possible, but the Rockets chose not to do that. And it's not like there wasn't any upside. If the Rockets had traded Ryan into cap space in June, they would have had a lot more wiggle room in terms of luxury tax savings to potentially match the one-year $15 million deal that Trevor Ariza got from the Phoenix Suns. So that right there should tell you that Ryan is not seen by the Rockets as an albatross. Instead, I think the Rockets see him at least partially as an opportunity. And I think we need to sort of kind of reconfigure how we look at him, because yes, he's an overpaid basketball player. He's $20 million a year, and at the moment, he's not even guaranteed to be in the Rockets rotation, not even in a backup, say, 12 minutes per game role as the backup five. That said, his contract, maybe by the trade deadline, and especially next offseason when it's a $20 million expiring deal, has a lot of value. Because especially next offseason, there's going to be a lot of player movement around the NBA. Just think of all the stars that are going to be out there. Think of all the one-year deals that have been signed this offseason. There could be a lot of player movement. And while I don't think Ryan's necessarily going to be a positive asset, at the same time, having $20 million in expiring money to line up salaries if a star wants to get to Houston, there's a lot of value in that. And I think that's one reason why, even if it cost them Trevor Ariza, they didn't ditch him in June. Because if it was as simple as, okay, we need to save some luxury tax dollars and potentially give Tillman a little bit more, Tillman Fertitta, more breathing room, then yeah, you do that deal in June, and Ryan's not here, and Trevor Ariza probably is. This is a league in which Timothy Mozgov, a far worse contract than Ryan, you consider over $16 million a year, and he isn't even playable, has been moved not once, but twice. The Rockets are not unable to move Ryan Anderson. It's that to this point, the deal has not really made sense, especially when you consider the upside that they would be giving up down the road. Now today, as we chat into July, early August, look, it's a pointless hypothetical, the Rockets ditching him just to ditch him, trading him into cap space, because nobody even has $20 million in cap space, even if they wanted to. The Kings are, I don't know, what, $10, $15 million? You're the only team that even has a little bit of cap space. But even there, you're only talking about 50% or a little bit above in terms of absorbing that Ryan Anderson contract. For a lot of reasons, the availability of teams with $20-plus million in cap space, plus the ability to use any cash savings in terms of wiggle room with the luxury tax, either on other free agents or giving more money to one of your own free agents with bird rights, such as Trevor Ariza, the benefit would have been in June. It doesn't make sense around the NBA. The money just isn't there anymore. And it doesn't make sense for the Rockets. There's no upside. And quite frankly, there's not even a team with anywhere near the cap space to absorb Ryan. So you're not going to dump him just to dump him at this point. That ship has sailed. Now, the closest thing to a dump that could happen is trading Ryan for guys that are on one-year contracts. I've seen this scenario suggested a little bit with the Kings because Sacramento has a number of guys, Amon Shumpert, who could fit the 3-and-D profile, at least the defensive side of that, Zach Randolph, Kosta Kufis. The Kings have a lot of bigger salaries that are expiring at the end of this year. And so, in theory, without actually looking in depth at the Rockets' cap situation, you could see potentially a match there because we know Ryan Anderson has Sacramento roots. The Kings went after him in July 2016 the same way the Rockets did. Those were the two finalists. And on paper, you could say, okay, you can shed a year off of Ryan's contract. The reason I don't really see that as viable either, that's the closest thing to a dump, but what's the upside there for the Rockets? The value proposition has to work out. There's a pretty clear downside for whoever's acquiring Ryan Anderson if they were to trade an expiring contract for him in that they are delaying cap room by a year. The upside for the Rockets, I guess, is that they're getting off of Ryan's deal a year early, and so there's some luxury tax savings. There certainly aren't salary cap savings. The Rockets, after giving $250 million guaranteed, well, $240 plus incentives, to Clint Capela and Chris Paul this offseason over the next 4 or 5 seasons, the Rockets are capped out for the foreseeable future, the remainder of this era. So whether you trade Ryan or not, you're an over-the-cap team. Now, you could argue that, yes, giving Tillman Fertitta a little bit more breathing room with regards to luxury tax has a value. But next offseason, the Rockets don't even have a current rotation piece that's going to be a free agent and eligible for bird rights. The only rotation pieces currently slotted for potential free agency next summer would be Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, and since those are one-year minimum guys, it's not like you can go beyond the cap to re-sign them anyway. You're limited to your exceptions, most notably your mid-level exception next summer, as we discussed on last week's show about the financial implications of Melo taking a minimum deal. So what exactly is the basketball upside for the Rockets in getting a contract or two that expire a year shorter than Ryan Anderson? In a league where you're competing with the Warriors, it's always about the upside. That's how Daryl Morey thinks. Quite frankly, it would have made more sense, in my opinion, to just shed Ryan in June and potentially go over the cap to re-sign Ariza, a key free agent who you had bird rights to, if that's the path you wanted to do. To get an expiring contract next summer, you would still have to give up some in the way of future picks. Maybe not the same as dumping Ryan into cap space, but you'd have to give up something because you're getting the team that is trading for Ryan to give up their cap space to delay it by a year. You'd have to give them something for doing that. And I'm not really sure what the upside for the Rockets is. At least if they had done it in June, which they obviously chose not to, you could have theoretically kept Ariza. Instead, with the way the Rockets' rotation is currently configured, Harden, Chris Paul, PJ Tucker, Clint Capela, Eric Gordon, all your mainstays are under contract through at least 2020. And the guys who aren't, Carmelo and James Ennis, you're limited in what you can offer them regardless just because of the NBA's collective bargaining agreement. So I don't really see what the upside for the Rockets is. Yes, you give Tillman Fertitta a little bit more breathing room under luxury tax, but you don't really give him any more avenues to spend it. So what's the point if you were Daryl Morey and the Rockets? Unless you're Tillman Fertitta himself or his accountant, why should that matter to you? You should only care about the luxury tax and limiting the owner's payments if, by doing so, you're giving him another option, another avenue to upgrade the team. That's not really going to be the case next summer. I suppose the one scenario you could throw out would be potentially using an expiring contract in July 2019 at this coming year's trade deadline. Like maybe if something goes south in Minnesota with Jimmy Butler, and then that contract you could use to fill, or a combination of contracts, instead of Ryan Anderson, it'd be more palatable because they're expiring sooner. I guess, but it seems pretty clear that this coming year's free agents have already kind of been picked through a little bit. There's only limited opportunities, whereas I think next summer there's going to be a lot more player movement. You have such a more loaded class in terms of guys who can dictate their way out. And really, for the Rockets, you don't have a ton in the way of young prospects or future picks. They have decent guys, but it's not like future first-round picks are going to be late at the back of the round, and D'Anthony Melton are all of a sudden going to be enough to get you in the game for any trade package out there, any trade candidate, I should say. For the Rockets, you're probably going to be looking at next summer anyway if you're going to swing a big deal for another star-level player in Houston, because it needs to be more of a leverage situation, i.e. the guy can walk immediately to another team if you don't trade him to Houston now. Maybe that's where the expiring contract of Ryan Anderson or someone else comes into play. So that's why I don't see the expiring scenarios, the Amon Shumpert and Kosta Kufis, those types of combinations, as all that reasonable. I just don't really see it matching up well, because the Kings are going to want something for taking an extra year in Ryan Anderson, and I don't know what it benefits the Rockets to do that. If anything, you might could argue that it hurts them, because you're going to have a stronger group of players you could go after next summer with Ryan Anderson's expiring contract than you could theoretically at the deadline with Shumpert and Zach Randolph, or Shumpert and Kosta Kufis, or whatever the combination is. The sweet spot to me is two-year deals that fits the criteria of long-term money that Brian Windhorst laid out, and also the specific names that we've heard from Kelly Eco and Zach Lowe, obviously Kent Bazemore, but also Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, J.R. Smith. They all have one thing in common: they're two-year deals. That, to me, is the sweet spot, because you're not going to have to pay nearly as much of a premium. Again, if you're trading for an expiring contract, you would have to make it worth that team's while to delay their potential cap room. In the case of, say, Ryan for Kent Bazemore, the money is the same for Atlanta in terms of when they get off of those overpaid deals. Now, you still might have to give up something, because Kent Bazemore is a better player than Ryan Anderson, but you're not paying a premium for the benefits of cap flexibility, which don't even apply in the case of Houston, given their specific situation. That's why I think, of course, it's an extreme fallback, but I can even see J.R. Smith being in play. Does he fit in terms of the defensive presence that you might want? No, but he still fits contractually, and if in addition to fitting contractually, he makes a little bit more position sense in terms of shooting than Ryan Anderson does, shooting at the wing, and J.R. Smith shooting at the five in the case of Ryan Anderson, where I think the Rockets feel pretty good about their young depth, especially guys like Hartenstein and Joe Chi coming off strong summer league appearances in Las Vegas, that even that could be something that makes some sense for the Rockets. Now, I think they prefer to get a more defensive player first. That's why Tyler Johnson, James Johnson from Miami, Kent Bazemore in Atlanta, I think those are at the top of the list. But even J.R. Smith isn't that crazy as a fallback, because where the Rockets and these two-year deals come into play for Ryan Anderson in a potential trade, this is a scenario where the Rockets can have their cake and eat it too. And what I mean by that is you still get the benefit of a contract expiring in 2020 that next offseason can be a really valuable piece around the NBA as far as matching salaries without it being seen as a negative, because effectively it's an expiring deal. I think there's a lot of upside to that. I think that played a part in why the Rockets have not ditched Ryan just to ditch him, why they didn't do it in June and theoretically been able to retain Trevor Ariza by doing so. They see value in that. But in addition to the value at the end of the rainbow, so to speak, when the contract's about to expire, you could also get a guy who makes more sense for you in the meantime, in this coming season. So that's why, to me, guys that are on the same contract structure, same years, somewhat similarly overpaid, but make more sense in terms of your position needs, ideally also fit in terms of defense. That, to me, is the sweet spot for a deal, where the cost for the Rockets to move Ryan, it's not so extreme that it outweighs the potential benefits. Because in this case, you get two potential benefits. You get a guy who could be a little bit more of an upgrade for you in the short term, and while still retaining that flexibility for the long term, that next offseason, which should be crazy, the Rockets have a big expiring contract that's not really that essential to them that they could use to make salaries work in a lot of these potential trade configurations. Now, I've seen some folks suggest going even longer than Ryan Anderson. One name that I've seen thrown out a lot on Rockets Twitter of late is Nick Batum out of Charlotte, whose deal runs through 2021. I personally do not see that because of the reasons that we've just been outlining, which is the importance of trade flexibility next offseason when there's expected to be so much player movement around the NBA. Also, first time in a few years, you're going to have the salary cap jump a little bit next summer, which should be another factor encouraging more player movement. With Batum not expiring, until 2021, next offseason for Batum, who's averaging about $25 million per year on his contract, that's going to be equivalent to what this offseason was for Ryan Anderson, and we've seen how hard he's been to move. To me, the key for the Rockets is the here and now. It's about maximizing the last 2 or 3 years that you have with Chris Paul in your prime. Making a deal with Ryan Anderson for a contract that lasts longer than Ryan, unless it's a player you really, really like, and that's probably not going to be the case considering you're trading Ryan Anderson, the key consideration is the trade value down the road. Because the short term, in terms of getting a little boost in the end of your rotation, someone who's more playable than Ryan, that's nice. But the bigger asset, in terms of that contract, is what it means for you next summer. And I don't see the Rockets punting the expiring year a year beyond Ryan Anderson. To me, that's why 2020 makes sense, 2019 doesn't, but 2021 doesn't either. I don't really see the benefit of moving the timetable up because I'm not sure who's out there this offseason or at the deadline, but I also don't see the Rockets moving the timetable of that expiring deal when the overpaid contract becomes movable because it's expiring. I don't see the benefit in pushing that back. To me, it's two-year contracts, the same way as Ryan, but more playable in the short term. That's the sweet spot. That's where I think a deal ultimately gets done. Maybe by the season, certainly the Rockets will be trying, but if not, definitely by February. And then if you can address your 3-and-D need that way, then potentially you can use your buyout funds somewhere else. So in closing out the podcast, this Ryan Anderson trade episode, it's unclear if anything's imminent, but the last thing I'm going to leave you guys with, you need to stop thinking about him so much as an albatross and think of him more as an opportunity. Because I guarantee you, that's how Daryl Morey and the Houston Rockets front office is looking at this. Yes, he is overpaid, but that deal is handed out. It's done. And as far as what moving him means for a team that's over the cap regardless and doesn't even have a significant rotation piece up until 2020, the implications of even getting a little bit of luxury tax breathing room are minimal here. Yes, Ryan Anderson is overpaid, but guess what? The last year of his contract isn't a negative because it's expiring. It's really just the first 3 years that's a negative asset, and guess what? Two of the three are gone. And one of the two, he was actually a starting power forward on a team that won 55 games and was the 3 seed in the West. So it's not like it's been a total bust, but in terms of the pain of that contract constricting your movement in the offseason, it's already pretty much done. Because this is the last offseason in which he is a huge potential negative to you, and most of this offseason has already come and gone, especially with regards to the big free agents. So while Ryan has been a negative asset in the past, he has been an albatross at times. Now, as we chat entering August 2018, that's pretty much gone. We're entering the period in which his value is slowly going to progress to neutral, to maybe even slightly positive, because of the combination, of course, of salary matching ability and the fact that Houston's probably going to be a pretty desirable destination for either free agents or players who, for one reason or another, are able to get on the trade market next summer. So if you wanted to ditch Ryan to feel better about not having an overpaid guy on your team to get rid of the contract, the time to do that was last offseason or June. That's gone now. At this point, the pain is pretty much over with. You need to look at what's left of that contract as an opportunity. Now, I'm not saying that Ryan needs to stay in Houston, but I think the best way to look at him, again, is through what's largely a positive, the final year of that contract, and then figure out, is there a way that you can retain that positive, the flexibility that a huge expiring deal gives you to match salary on trades, while potentially giving you a small short-term boost in terms of players that are a better rotation fit for you right now. I don't see it happening with expiring deals because teams are going to want you to give up a lot of future value to take the extra year of Ryan Anderson. But if you can find guys expiring the same year, then yeah, to me, it makes a lot of sense. That's why we're here in the Rockets, involved with guys like Kent Bazemore, Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, even J.R. Smith. If you can find a guy that expires in 2020 that has an overpaid contract to where you can make the math work, but they potentially are better either position or skill of need in Houston relative to what Ryan Anderson provides, then to me, the Rockets can and will be looking at those opportunities. Maybe it happens before training camp in the next 6 weeks, but regardless, I think there's a good shot it happens by the February trade deadline, as Daryl Morey has clearly been alluding to for some time. So with that, we'll wrap up this Ryan Anderson-themed episode because, well, tomorrow we should have other players and happier subjects potentially to discuss, assuming the Carmelo Anthony deal finally gets to the finish line when he becomes a free agent at 4 p.m. Houston time Wednesday afternoon. So until then, I will sign off. If you want any more content in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. I've also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a website, lockedonrockets.com, a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us already, iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, Google Play, tune in. Wherever you listen to your podcast, search for Locked On Rockets, or hell, search for Locked On Texans too, or any show across the NBA, NFL, even some Major League Baseball and college football. That's what the Locked On Podcast Network is all about. We've got local experts across all of these sports. And in Houston, that's not just me, but also Locked On Texans, where Robert Land and Brian Patterson, good friends of mine, give you the scoop on everything going on with the Houston Texans, who are now in training camp up in West Virginia. So you want an update on what they are doing as they embark on, well, the final week of preparation before, I think, August 9th, next Thursday, they begin preseason play. Don't hesitate to check out their podcast as well. But whether you listen to them, to me, or any other show, again, download, subscribe to the platforms, and if you do that, you get alerts whenever there's a new episode to download. So if there's breaking news, you know when there's a new episode. And beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and make the business model work here at Locked On Rockets, which is the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So as always, thanks to you guys for listening. Enjoy the rest of your evenings or the rest of your day Wednesday if you're listening to this early Wednesday morning. And stay tuned for more coverage because my guess is by the end of Wednesday or early Thursday at the latest, we should have more discussion as the Rockets finally, after 14 months or so, seal a deal with Carmelo Anthony. Until then, thanks for listening and have a good night.